Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It is great to have with us a man we have not spoken to in a frightfully long time, I'm sorry to say, and I think that's partly due to the fact that he's been off writing a very important new book. It is entitled Thou Shalt Innovate, a fascinating look at what Israel is doing in the way of innovation and what it means for all the rest of us. And this is one of, I think, five of his very highly regarded books. Avi is a senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council and an active contributor to the public policy debate in the private sector these days, as he used to be a very accomplished policy practitioner in the departments of the Treasury and the Defense Department in the public sector in the past. It's great to have him back, among other things. Avi, congratulations on Thou Shalt Innovate.
Thank you, Frank. It's always wonderful to be back on your show. I'm so pleased to have some time with you today. Thanks.
Good. The pleasure's mine. Listen, tell us a little bit about the thesis of the book, and in particular, the relevance of what Israel has been doing in the innovation domain for, well, our country, among others.
Sure. So Thou Shalt Innovate is a book that features innovations that have come from Israel that have had a global impact and have improved the lives of billions of people collectively. If you look at the innovations coming from Israel today, they're improving the lives of billions of people when it comes to water, medicine, science, agriculture, food. We're seeing an unbelievable amount of innovation coming out of the country, making a real impact on how people live their lives and what they're doing. And I attribute that to a number of different factors. The innovative part of the country comes as a result of, I believe, great universities, smart government programs, resource awareness when it comes to water, a very rich, diverse culture, the idea of grit and resilience and determination. And underlying all that is a highly innovative military. And when you couple that with the prophetic tradition that has been around for 3,000 years and encouraging people to improve the world, you have not only a highly innovative society, but a society that is reaching out to the rest of humanity and making it better. And so not only improving the lives of their own citizens, but improving the lives of citizens around the world.
Yeah. Let me just ask you to drill down on one example of this. You mentioned water. As you know, Avi, water is becoming a precious resource in lots of places, including Israel's neighbor, Egypt. What has Israel been able to do to try to help address the acute need of Egyptians for water, and thereby making that important strategic partner for Egypt hopefully more secure for the future?
I'm so pleased that you asked. So Israel is the, first we start by saying Israel is the only country in the world to have declared water independence. And when I say water independence, it is not dependent on the weather or its neighbors for its own water needs.
And that is a country in a desert, it should be remembered. So that's saying something, isn't it?
Israel is 60% desert and the only country in the world to have achieved this. And so Israel has done this using a number of different innovations. One, desalination. Okay, the country has 5 desalination plants, and as a result has a surplus of water. I should point out this was not innovated in Israel. Desalination was innovated in the United States by gentlemen who actually made Aliyah to Israel and perfected that technology in Israel. Secondly, the country innovated something called drip irrigation. And you can find this in most gardens in the United States and around the world today. It's essentially plastic tubes that emit water drop by drop very slowly, which is used by over 1 billion people around the world today. And it uses a third of the water and doubles the yield of any crop. Third, Israel is a leader in the world when it comes to recycling. So when we go to the bathroom and we flush the toilet, Israel takes out, removes the waste, cleans the water 5 times, and recycles 90% of its water for agriculture. It is the world's leader. And just to understand where it stands in the hierarchy, Israel is 90%. The second country down is Singapore at 20%. And here in the United States, we're at 8%. And when you couple that with dual flush toilets and early detection systems that alert city authorities to when there are leaks, Israel has been able to accomplish a great feat. Now, Israel has been taking this the sum of the whole is greater than its parts approach, and started teaching its neighbors and countries around the world how to build a water surplus. Now, bringing it to Egypt. Egypt, in 7 years, is facing a water problem of biblical proportions. It is going to run out of water. And when you think about where they're going to turn, it only makes sense that Egypt is going to turn to its neighbor, Israel, the startup nation, the only country in the world to have declared water independence. And as I look to the future, this is one of the things I am most hopeful about. When you look at Israel's relationship with its neighbors, near and far, you can see that Israel is a country that is solving global problems. In California, Israel has built the largest desalination plant in the Western Hemisphere. In places like India and China, Israel has built the largest desalination plants. And Israel has this formula for water independence. It will continue to promote that model for the benefit of humanity.
This is fantastic, Avi, and I'm so grateful that you've pulled this information together. It is inspiring, as well as I suspect the kind of thing that will translate into further benefits as more people learn about these innovations in your book, Thou Shalt Innovate. Hey, speaking of your books, let me ask you about one that you've written about in Beacon of Hatred, which is a book about Hezbollah's Al-Manar television network. I'm interested not so much in the network as in what Hezbollah is up to, Avi, and in particular, what it's done to, talk about innovation, to amass this immense arsenal of missiles and rockets capable of reaching, as I understand it, all of Israel. Some 150,000 of them by some counts. As well as what it's doing now with Iranian and Russian and Syrian help in Syria, that's greatly intensifying the threat to Israel from the north.
So obviously Hezbollah is a radical Islamic organization with an ideology of death and destruction. They're very proud of the fact that what motivates them is death and killing versus the value of life. And allow me to just tie it back to innovation for just a moment in regards to these rockets. Israel is essentially, I don't want to say solved that problem, but in 2012, Israel was the first country in the world to innovate a missile defense system that is able to shoot projectiles out of the sky. And that system is called the Iron Dome. It has a 90% success rate. I should also point out that it's the only rocket system in the entire world to have parts from Toys R Us in the system itself. It's highly innovative. It's relatively inexpensive. And it is able to shoot out these projectiles with 90% success rate. And so Israelis, when they go to bed at night, they know that they can find comfort under the system called the Iron Dome, whether it comes from radical Islamic threats emanating from Lebanon, from Gaza, or other parts of the Arab world. Hezbollah has been very robust in places like Syria, spreading its ideology of hate and destruction, working very closely alongside their colleagues and friends in Iran. Iran, interestingly, is also facing its own water crisis. If you look a decade or two into the future, among other things, 50% of its population are going to become water refugees. Who do you think they're going to turn to when they run out of water? I tend to think that it's going to be the state of Israel. And so as your listeners look to the next few years, the Middle East is about to change radically as a result of innovation. How are organizations like Hezbollah and Iran going to deal with this?
I fear that there's a certain, as you know, 12-er mentality operating at least at the senior-most ranks of the Iranian regime, Avi Dorsch, that holds that, the end of times is at hand, and they're just going to count on the Mahdi to sort all this out in some sort of horrific, apocalyptic thrash. But I did want to just emphasize the point you've just made, that the Iron Dome, I had a hand in the Memorandum of Understanding back in the Reagan administration with Israel that gave rise to collaboration between our two countries on missile defense, and so feel a certain satisfaction that the progress the Israelis have made. It's one thing to be dealing with the numbers of these projectiles that they, as you say, the Sharia supremacists in Gaza and perhaps even Sinai or Lebanon might throw at them. But if that arsenal is unleashed, it's going to be a very tough deal, even for a defense like the Iron Dome. So it makes all the more important preventing that kind of conflict from happening. And this this brings me to the larger question. I have the feeling that as you've done due diligence on the banking system of Iran, among other features of its nefarious operations, there are real vulnerabilities there to be exploited, whether it's water in the future or whether it's the collapsing currency at the moment or the demographic change that's taking place with large numbers of young people who have no use for this regime. If you were advising President Trump at the moment, Avijoresh, what would you be counseling he do about Iran to intensify those problems, I guess, in the short term for the purpose of alleviating the danger that this regime represents to all of us?
So in part, I would focus on innovation. One, I would encourage many us to offer visas to a lot of their greatest scientists. Iran is a highly innovative society, and we could and should consider causing a massive brain drain to take place from Iran to the United States. Secondly, when it comes to banking sanctions, there's no reason why we should open the banking system to Iran. They have proved time and time again that their banking system has been used to proliferate weapons of mass destruction and terrorism. The sanctions regime against that country should be increased. And the thin edge of the wedge is the banking sector. We should be identifying banks that are playing a hand in proliferating weapons of mass destruction.
Well, I'm for that, needless to say. And Avijoresh, your expertise in these matters is greatly appreciated, as is your time at this Defense Department and the Treasury Department working in that kind of battle space. Come back to us again very soon. Meantime, have a good weekend. It's great to talk with you, and we'll look forward to doing more of it. Next up, Bill Gertz joins us. We'll be talking with him about Chinese communists on campus and what they're up to and more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.